Blog Talk Radio.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Coach on Fire Radio.
Fire the fire.
Hello, good afternoon, everybody. It's Maureen Wise here. I'm calling from Australia. And if you're in North America, it's good afternoon. If it's in Australia, it's good morning. So hello and welcome to Wise Women. Today, my guest is Grace Sharon. She's a school chaplain, a coach, a speaker, a humanitarian, and we'll be talking about how to communicate better with our kids. So if you're calling from outside Australia, the number is 646-668-2081. And if you are calling from in Australia, you can actually manage to get on at a at http://9665321. And I'd love to hear what you've got to say. So we're now going to go through a bit of a process. My name's Maureen Wise, by the way, and I'm really excited to be able to present to you some amazing guests who will inspire you, challenge you, and intrigue you. Guests who think differently. Guests who are making a success of their lives. They will challenge you, inspire you, and intrigue you. And they're wise women. Women who support other women and creating a difference, who are leaders in their communities, who are inspiring other women to do the same. Each fortnight, we'll be interviewing a different woman, and as a creativity coach and innovation consultant, I'll be finding out how my guests have trusted that intuition and have taken steps to live a life of purpose. I'm going to be also asking them to share their stories, how they're making a difference and what that means to them, and how intuitive thinking has led to their success. We'll find out what their purpose is, what inspires them, and I'll also be asking them for tips and advice that you can take away and use in your life, relationships, and your business. One regular feature we'll have each week is a Q&A relating to how you can bring intuitive thinking into your life and business to inspire innovation, imagination, and communication. Our guest for today is a wise woman who hails from Slant Valley in the eastern Victoria, Australia. Her name is Grace Sharon, and she's made a remarkable story which takes us from Australia to the Thai-Burma border. Grace is on a mission to help families communicate better. Firstly, though, before we meet Grace, let's delve into our Q&A for today. A question I'm often asked is, what is intuitive thinking, and how can it improve business and communication? In life, everything must have polar opposites to exist. We've got male, female, black, white, good, bad, on, off, north, south, east, west, happiness, sadness, success, failure, yes, no, yin and yang, and so forth. And that's equally true for our thinking. We often hear about left brain and right brain, to which we mostly associate analytical thinking or reasoning to the left brain and language, creative thinking or emotion, and images to the right brain. For years, schools focused and business have carried out predominance of left brain thinking. Analysis, calculations, facts and figures, numeracy, literacy, which is necessary, but at the expense of what? Yes, creativity and even emotional intelligence. Today, however, business is changing so rapidly that we need to keep up. We need to start thinking about how we can be different, communicate differently, and develop our emotional intelligence, a key component of effective communication in teams. Good communication, i.e. the arts, leads then to innovation, to introduce something new. It's in direct contrast with analysis which has been done already, and it's very right-brain. Deepak Chopra tells us, The highest levels of performance come to people who are centered, intuitive, creative, and reflective. People who know to see a problem as an opportunity. But what has creativity and visual expression got to do with intuition, which is based on non-reason? Intuition comes from the gut, it's feeling. We all have intuition. As a matter of fact, it's been around for a lot longer than analytical thinking and is anything but precise. We can all think of a time when we had a gut feeling or trusted our gut before we made a decision. We often start up here and look to the facts, the risks and so forth, when it's all weighed up, often with our gut feeling, and we make that decision and it generally works out well anyway. Through both intuition and analysis, we're able to access a far greater range of thinking, to use our whole brain. In general, in energy perspectives, analysis is a very masculine sort of energy. Well, intuition is a feminine one. Intuition has long been criticised by business and schools, and that is a bit too airy-fairy, and many people not only dismissed it, they've tried to drown it out altogether. However, Albert Einstein tells us, cannot solve their problems with the same thinking we used when we created them. With the rise of women in business, intuition, the feminine energy and collaborative communication have made a resurgence as we learn to trust our gut instincts and practice tolerance. This is not to deny analysis is still very much needed. This is why intuitive thinking is so important. It brings together both intuition, non-reasoning, and thinking, reasoning, to create the sweet spot where we maximise our success through innovation and analysis and communication. And that brings us to our guest today. Her name's Grace Sharon. She's a wise woman and she's making a difference helping families and schools, parents and children and teachers to communicate more effectively, which sets young people up for success and for a fulfilling life. So we've got Grace on the line now, I'm thinking. Are you there, Grace? Hello, Grace. So we've got you unmuted. Let's see. Hello, Grace.
Hello. How are you, Maureen?
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic.
That's good.
I'm so glad. So glad to hear you, Grace.
I can assure you I am too.
That's wonderful. So I'm really looking forward to talking to you today because you've got so much to share with us. So first
of all,
just tell us a little bit about yourself and this mission that you're on.
Well, it all started because I came from a family life that was, I think the best way I could say it was disengaged with their own humanity. I was a foster child amongst many families, and that led to various ways of abuse. And what I did was I ended up working for young people and for the, shall I say, the communities on the edge of society. I worked for the Aboriginal Torres Strait Islanders Legal Service. I started up, helped start up the Brisbane Youth Service. I then moved to Newcastle where I helped out a youth service there. And later years moved to Melbourne where I became a prison chaplain. I was a chaplain in a psychiatric acute state centre. And I gained the skills that allowed me to then be the director of a drug detox organisation, community program, for 14 to 25-year-olds on the street. And now I'm a school chaplain, trying to help children make choices where they feel like that they belong and that they are loved and that they're good enough in the family home rather than looking for alternatives out in society that might not be good for them.
Wow, that's an amazing repertoire of experiences that you've had there, Grace. And it's all based on helping other people to move beyond their limiting beliefs, to move beyond all the things that have held them back, their past, their history, you know, even yourself, you mentioned a life of abuse and that. And do you find that that was probably one of the key contributing factors to helping you move forward? What do you think is that inspires you and motivates you?
I think the turning point for me, because I always had a victim mentality, and one day, there's a beautiful woman, Sharon Pearson, who is the owner, the founder of the Coaching Institute in Victoria, and she said when she was giving one of her trainings that our past does not own our future, and that we can create a future that the past does not control. And that was such an eye-opener for me. I was sitting there going, are you sure about this? And I can assure you, after 2 years of being in her organization, it's true. You know, my past doesn't own me anymore, and I can create the future that I want and that I aspire to be.
Oh, how liberating that must have been for you.
Yeah, it was and is. It still is. As you can imagine, you go through a life of trauma, and then somehow you've got to crawl your way out of that. And I just, as soon as I start thinking about the memories or thinking about what's happened to me, or is this going to be the same as the past, I quickly move into, oh no, hang on, I've got to give some gratitude. And I find that the minute I give gratitude, my mindset changes to a much more positive mindset about where I am now, not where I was in the past.
I can sort of hear that in your voice as well. There's that sense of moving forward in the future, that confidence that just like the past is gone. Past is the past,
yes.
Can't do anything about it. And the future is what you make of it, and what you're making other people is very inspiring. Now, Grace, we've actually got someone online here. So I'm going to unmute this number 858, and I think they've got a question for you.
Thank you.
So we'll just see how we go. Hello, number 858. Have you got a question for us? Well, I've unmuted them. I'm not sure what's happening. Hello, are you there? I think maybe they've we'll come back to them a bit later on. See how they go.
Okay.
So let's move on to communication, because we've been talking a bit about communication in my bit that I just spoke about. We're talking about intuitive thinking and communication. And that's one of the areas that you yourself really find something really important for kids these days particularly. Do you want to share us about that?
I am very aware. There was a great meteorologist in the 1960s that talked about the effect of a butterfly's wings, how the butterfly's wings flap can cause or delay or even prevent a volcano in an adjoining state in the USA. And when we think about that, and we think about the effect of our language, and what that language has in our family home, between partnerships, you know, husbands and wives, and what our children grow up into, it is very real for me that what we say and speak is what we create. And so, therefore, young children who are around abusive language or around even conflict, not necessarily abusive, but conflict all the time, when the partners don't know how to resolve that conflict, the child just learns that conflict is a normal way of life. So like the butterfly's wings that has an effect so far in the universe, so do our words and our actions. Because, you know, children model. I remember being told by a psychologist who comes to our school, the reason a baby smiles, and if you can, you know, if you and your listeners would like to just imagine a baby in your arms and you're looking down at it smiling, that's how it learns how to smile back. It's the love and the smiling from the mother that causes it to regenerate that physiology in itself. So if you have children who are used to this love, who are used to connection, who are used to the good things in the nurturing from the mother, they will grow up with a much stronger identity. But if you have someone who is having difficulty with their pregnancy or having difficulty with their home life, that is what the baby feels and sees and recognises that that may be normal. You know, from zero to...
Powerful message,
It is. Maurice Morrissey, you know, he, a sociologist, he said that from zero to seven is when we're developing our ego. From 7 to 15 is our modelling years. So that is when our children are looking to the adults as to who they're going to model. And if they don't find the good modelling in the adults or the modelling that they perceive they need, they will go external. And we all know where that might end up. So that's why I think it's really important for parents to hear, see and feel and know that the importance of their communication with their children and with other adults in the home, because what we do matters, and we matter. You know, the children matter. We matter as adults.
That's I'm getting goosebumps just hearing what you're saying, actually. I'm thinking parents who are listening to this at the moment, this must be just such a powerful message for them as well. There's so many times that we see kids, and having been a teacher myself, and I see kids at school who haven't had a good role model, or whose parents, like, they are a role model of sorts, but they still don't have a lot of the skills, because, as you know, kids don't come with a handbook when they're born. And having someone like what you're doing, having that, it just helps people to focus on what is important and the actual importance of not just the words that we use, but like you say, the body language, the a look, a frown, anything like that can make a huge impact, because kids obviously will put a meaning onto that, even if it's not a meaning that the parent was intending. The kids put a meaning onto that, and that can carry through for the rest of their life, can't it?
Exactly. Nothing has meaning until the meaning that we give it. And that is, we have this saying in coaching that says, the map is not the territory. And one of the reasons, you know, a map is not the actual place. And I say it to the young ones all the time. I put a map up on the board and I say, where is this? And they give me the name of the place. And then I say, is that really whatever place it is? And they go, yeah. And I say, did you drive on that piece of paper this morning? And they sort of look at me and they think I'm crazy until some of them get it. And they go, oh, no, it's out there, and point out the window, you know. And so they realise that just because this piece of paper says that that's a place, that's not the actual territory. That's not the actual place. And so it is with our minds. You know, we have the choice of what we put into our brain, what we want to focus on. Just like a map maker has the choice of what goes on the map, because all maps don't have everything in it. I love using one at the moment that doesn't have McDonald's and Hungry Jack's, and I try and get them finding it. But it helps them to understand that there are certain things that we can do in our brain that creates our environment, rather than having to think a particular way just because the map maker or society or their environment tells them that they have to do it that way. It's quite an extraordinary revelation for young people to actually hear and see that they can actually create their environment. They don't have to accept what is said about their town. For example, I live in a... Sorry. Go on.
No, I was going to say, I would warrant that would be a revelation for adults as well as children, because a lot of adults aren't even aware of how they can create their lives either. They just take whatever comes each day. So it's great to be able to get this message through to kids.
Yeah, it is. One of the things that I hear all the time, both in the schoolyard as well as when I'm shopping or even going to church, or, you know, I hear so many people say all the time, oh, we can't do that here. We're, you know, from where we're from, or we're from this, or we're, oh, no, we couldn't do that here. Oh, no, you did that because you're in the city. And the excuses and the self-limiting belief that that's why they can't do something, I was like that. I understand where they're coming from. That's why my change in my own focus and my own journey has been such an example for them. Oh, you can do it. We did. Oh, you can do it. And I show them many, 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 many videos of people on YouTube and that who have done things when they were told or didn't think it was possible.
That's just, oh, how inspirational. You must be getting awesome results from these kids.
They're certainly turning their lives around. Some of them, I was just speaking to my co-worker this morning because, we've got a difficult situation at the moment. And I just, I'm reminded when I was a prison chaplain, I was reminded this morning of what I was told there. The harder they hit, the more love they need. So, there's a great personal development person in Melbourne, Joe Parnay, and we asked him one day how he keeps up his energy, and he was saying continually having an open soul allows you to get through the day of what you have to do and you don't get tired. And so for me, I just ensure in the morning, my morning ritual includes opening my soul, and I make sure that whatever I do during the day, whatever I have to speak, whatever I have to say, it comes from a place of love.
That is a powerful message too. I'm going to say, if people listening to this call could just take even just that one aspect of coming from an open soul or an open heart and just coming from that place of love and seeing love, because what we focus on is what we get, isn't it? The more that we look for love, the more love we'll find. If we look for all the conflict and the hatred, we'll find it too. In looking for the love, it just shapes our day, doesn't it? So that's very powerful. Thanks so much for sharing that. I'm sure our listeners are really, really digging what we're saying.
Ah, it's a pleasure. They're very welcome. You're all very welcome. Yeah. I think for me, coming from working with young people who were, taking illicit drugs, I was very surprised at their reasons sometime for taking them. And I remember one group I was working with, and there was a boy from a very influential, very wealthy family. And I said to him, can I just ask you why you chose to start using drugs? And it was in the heroin, the days when heroin was really big. And he said to me, I know my mum and dad love me. I know that they're out there working their hearts out for me so they can buy me a car and buy me a house. But when I come home, I'm lonely. And I don't feel like I belong because there's no one to talk to. So I go out onto the street where I have my friends and we all belong together. And, now that I understand the three universal fears, am I loved, am I good enough, and do I belong? I say to the school all the time, whatever we do, those three things must be negated. Now, of course, as a school, we can't negate everything, but I ensure that we try to do the best that we can to make sure that all our students feel that they are loved, that they belong, and that they are good enough.
And that's just from a school's perspective too, that inclusiveness as well. It makes kids find, even school can be a refuge then too, from if they do have a difficult home life, knowing that they are loved, knowing that they belong, and knowing that they're part of a community, they're part of something different, something better. It just gives them such a great setup for life. That's amazing.
I think also it helps with them understanding conflict in their classrooms, which then transfers out into the schoolyard, because I often get called into a classroom and I use those three universal fears to say, do you think that when I take the victim out of the room and I say to the rest of the class members, do you think that person feels like they belong here right now? Do you think that they feel that you love them, that they actually belong to your class? And then I go into the not good enough. And sometimes it's a cultural issue. Sometimes it's a race issue. Sometimes it's an economic issue. And sometimes it's a medical issue that the person can't help. It's just that their behaviour pattern is such that annoys the other class members. So I use those three universal fears to bring about resolution to their conflict.
Oh, well, I hope there's some teachers in that listening to this call today who could bring that into their classrooms as well. That'd be fantastic.
Yeah.
It's very inspiring. So we're going to, I think that call is still there. We're going to try them, see if they've got something to say. Question? Hang on. Hello? Hello, are you there?
What's up?
Hello? Hello, are you there? You're breaking up. We might have to leave it. Thank you. Thank you. We can't hear you. Thanks very much. Okay. At that point, I'll just give the listeners the guest call-in number again. So it's 646-682081. And if you're in Australia listening live on HTTP /TOBTR.com/9665321. Call in and see if you can like to join the conversation. We're talking to Grace Charity today, who is a chaplain, a coach, a speaker, and a humanitarian, and someone who, as we've been listening to, is making a massive difference in schools with communication, with acceptance, with understanding their world, and seeing how they themselves can contribute to make the world better and not just expect other people to do it for them. So, Grace, I'd like to also have a chat to you about you were telling me one day that you're heading off to the Thai-Burma border. Would you like to share what you're doing over there?
I work with Karen refugees primarily. We went to visit the largest refugee camp in our ministry training for cross-cultural ministry in 2007, I think I first went across. And 5 years later, I became a teacher, and what I wanted to do was to help young people with their education following trauma. So I went back to the school in this camp. It was one of 9 camps on the Thai-Burma border. It was the biggest camp. When I was there, there was 155,000.
Wow.
I was an English teacher and then became school manager of a post-10 school. So they'd finished secondary school and they were in their secondary school finishes at year 10, so this was post-10. And we had, the year that I was there, we had the biggest graduation that there'd been on the border. So I work with these young people and their families, and I work with them in teaching them English. And I'm currently working with an organisation, a community group, with what is known as the Metadynamics Critical Alignment Model. So it's a four-dimensional model, and it looks at the environment. So what's the environment that you want in your organisation, or I say family? So what's your vision? What's your mission? What's your purpose in life? What sort of culture do you want? Because we all have culture, even as individuals, as well as the overall culture of whatever tradition or nation we might be from. And then we look at the structure of what that organisation or family would want. So if they want a particular vision, what's the structure in their home? They might want a peaceful home. They might want a happy home. What do they need to put in place to ensure that that vision is lived? And then we look at, okay, how are we going to make it happen now? How are we going to implement it? What do we need to do as a family to implement this great culture and environment that we're creating in our family home? And then the last thing I look at is the people. Who do you need to support you in bringing this vision in your family life or organization to fruition. And so families get really excited with that because they can see a way forward, a structure that they can work with that can create the life, the family life that they want. The Karen people are very, very, very big on family. The mother and father even has a say into their life even after they're married. So family life is very big traditionally. And I bring this model to them so they can have a hope for their future when they go back to their homeland.
Wow. So these are refugees who are living a pretty, I suppose, an almost feeling of a temporary existence. They're not in their own home. They're sort of in that limbo place, isn't it? So bringing some form of structure to them. And the vision and, the four levels, the implementation and the people, it's just really helping them to develop some sort of connection, I suppose, with where they are, do you find?
Yes, it's the biggest civil war that's ever run in the world. It's the biggest one that's going on. And they've been living in these refugee camps now for over 36 years. And I'll tell you it's sort of a funny side story. On my first visit there, we were late. Our truck at the end of the day was late in picking us up, and we had to wait about 35-40 minutes. By the time the truck actually came, it was 45 minutes. And in that time, we had to sit at the front gate of this refugee camp. And the soldiers were getting a bit nervous with us because we should have been out of the camp by then. And everyone, the tension was really rising. And I started to get very impatient about this bus was 45 minutes late. What was it doing? We needed to be out of here. And I got very prima donna-ish. And then as I sat there and started to reflect, I thought, my goodness, I couldn't wait 45 minutes for a bus. And these people have been waiting 30 years to go home.
Oh.
You know, it was... Yeah, that internal conflict going on in me about the patience these poor refugees need to be able to go home. And it was the biggest eye-opener for me. We visited a lot of organisations, the Karen Women's Organisation, which you would love actually, and a couple of the others, the ex-prisoners, the Students Association, the Young People's Association, and all these people were so energised that one day they were going to be able to go home. You know, for me, one of the saddest stories I heard, they have a family tradition where when a baby is born, they cut the umbilical cord and they tie it around a tree. And that tree is the child's tree for life. When they're having heart issues going on, when they're, you know, when they're in uproar about their identity as they go through the rituals of life, they go back to their tree. And, of course, some of them have now come to Australia or to America, and they were telling us there that one of the problems they're having when they transition to a third country is that we keep cutting down our trees, so they weren't able to give the child that
connection.
Form of identity, yes, that was their own, like they did back in Burma. So it was a real eye-opener for me about the traumatic upheaval of not only their home life, but also the culture and the connection with who they are as human beings. So I love working with them.
Yeah, what I'm hearing again is just that whole attitude of connection with family, with the land, with everything. It's just coming through with everything. Even communication is connection as well. It's just this whole message. And so when people have to migrate and move to another place, that connection that they've had has been broken, and that in itself can be quite traumatic. We all ourselves know have become connected to things. So if a house burns down or something like that, and we lose precious things that we've had, and there's that connection there has been broken. So for these refugees coming from places that they may never go back to again, connection for them must be really... Yeah, I can see where the trauma would be coming into it, and you're just giving them that little bit of a ray of hope, I suppose, in a way.
Yeah, I hope so. You know, I'm reminded as I listen to you, Tony Robbins has devised a model called the Six Core Needs, and we all have these needs: certainty and uncertainty, significance and love and connection, and growth and contribution. And if all six of those needs are met, then that's when we are living a fulfilled life. And when you think of these refugees, their certainty used to be in their identity and their homeland. So right now their uncertainty is way over the top and causes overwhelm sometimes, because they haven't got that certainty balance that brings them into alignment with their six core needs. And then you have the significance and the love and connection. And one of the problems that you have when people have lived in refugee camps for so long, I remember sitting on a bus going out to my school to the refugee camp. I used to go to the nearest town at the weekends. And I was sitting beside a lady who was, you know, eyeing me with such glee that I was from Australia. And I said, oh, do you want to go to Australia? And she said, we've been trying for 10 years, but, you know, the queue's very long to get into Australia. And I said, yes, it's one of those unfortunate things. And she said to me, I just want to give my daughter a status. She's 10 years old now, and she has never been a state of a country. She has no status because as refugees, they are not allowed to be a citizen in Thailand. They're not allowed to be a citizen in Burma. And so by the long queues in all the countries that are taking refugees now, she's very worried that her daughter will never experience being a citizen in a country. And I find that really disheartening.
Yeah, that is. And the thing is, this is so common these days. This must be such a, like, it's, so many people who are refugees today would be experiencing a similar thing, I imagine.
Exactly. And that was where the significance and the love and connection was coming in for me, is they're crying out for love and connection because they have no significance. You know, they're not even allowed to be a state citizen because they're refugees. And it's heartbreaking when you hear the mothers talk of their children growing up and they're not anything. They're not anyone. They don't have a birth certificate because they don't have it in their country, you know. And they're not allowed, you know, all our schools in the refugee camps, they're not allowed to be registered schools in Thailand because it's a refugee camp. And so they have no status, no recognition of their birth, of their education. So when they come out of the refugee camp, they have to be re-educated. And, you know, the other thing, Maureen, as you were talking before, because it's not a UN-run refugee camp, the Thai government, in all its, you know, its wisdom for its own people, have said this is only a temporary shelter. They do not call it a refugee camp. And so what happens is these people have to tear down. They have bamboo huts at the bottom of a mountain. It goes up the mountain. It goes along for 10 kilometres. And there are all these huts. It used to be an old tip, and now it's made into this refugee camp. You can imagine 155,000 in there. And they're only allowed to have their house standing for 2 years. And every 2 years, they've got to pull it down and rebuild it to ensure they don't get any notion that it might be long-term. So those families who have been there for 30 years are pulling their house down every 2 years and rebuilding it with bamboo. And I'd be going to school and you'd see these women walking with big logs of bamboo on their shoulders, rebuilding their homes. Oh, broke my heart.
Yeah, oh, I could imagine. So when you're in a situation like this, you see this and you feel so helpless and it is breaking your heart. What is it that you do to help yourself to feel, I suppose, so that you don't get, like, you could easily get caught right down in all this sort of emotion and you know, the misery and that. So what do you do to look after yourself?
I'm very big on self-care. For instance, when I was in the refugee camp, I had a house I made sure I had, first of all, I had a unit that was air conditioned, it was brand new, and then I got into a house in the closest city so that on the weekend I would go out and be refreshed, and then I'd come back in Monday morning totally refreshed from the weekend. And on the weekend I tried to make sure that I did as much self-nurturing as I could. Talked a lot to home, watched English TV, had air conditioning, went for a walk on the street to know I was safe. You know, all those sorts of things that you do to ensure that you keep your own being in its grounded and in its own place. Otherwise, if you connect in the wrong way, then you're actually not helping them, you're harming them.
You become part of the problem.
Exactly. We had a volunteer who couldn't, you know, like teachers have to give up, you know, move on from students after their year of teaching them. We had a teacher who couldn't move on. She wanted to come back. She wanted to live there. She wanted to eat their food. And I couldn't get her to understand that we were volunteers and we have to learn how to detach from our students. Otherwise, we become a problem for them. We become leaning on them rather than us helping them. So I really ensured at all possible times I was, again, coming from that place of love where I didn't manipulate them, I didn't want them to do anything for me. And some of them would get upset, you know, because they wanted to serve you like crazy because you were there helping them. But it was really good for me to ensure that my boundaries were in place so that they were not harmed anymore.
Because then it becomes a needy situation as opposed to a support and helping them rather than you feeling as though you need them to keep you, give you purpose, I suppose.
Exactly. Well. Yes.
So what a transition. You're at the school in down in Gippsland in Maui.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you're over on the Thai-Burmese border. And then how long are you over there for? I think you said.
I'll be there.
A month?
I'll be there 19. Yeah, just 3 weeks. Yeah. I'll be there this time.
3 weeks, and then come back for the start. American people would realise the Australian school year starts in February or end of January. So you come back to school, and boy, you must have some stories to bring back.
I do, and I use the stories when I'm teaching the young people, and when I do parent workshops. And so I use the stories, both of the border, and I have experience in Israel and Palestine and all over the world where I travel to look at best practice youth programs, youth rehabilitation programs. So I have a lot to bring. I did a conflict resolution course in Israel at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem. So I learned the same techniques as Scotland Yard and the New York Police Department do. So you know, I'm pretty well skilled in those sort of things. And it was through that course that I was asked to see if I could go and help the Burmese people.
Wow, okay. So what three things do you believe about human beings? Now that you've seen what human beings are capable of from both sides of the coin, what is three core things that you might believe about human beings from all this?
There's a saying... I read in a book called True Resurrection that the author, Harry Williams, says that a person is only violent if their identity is diminished. And so when I look at all these conflicts around the world, including, you know, my own home where I was brought up, including what I see at school, what I see on the streets, what I see in the media, I have to say I'm pretty well starting to agree with that comment. It is when we feel diminished that we get angry. You know, I see temper tantrums being thrown at school, boys who are really, you know, quite aggressive. You know, all they're trying to do is to get something out. Something wants to come out and be said, but they can't. They're too scared or they've always been shut down. You know, I really feel if we could allow our humanity to flourish in its own right, we will have better choices, we will have a better society, and we can connect with each other on a level that we haven't seen yet throughout the ages. I really believe our communication and the level of our tone, our physiology, All the things that we can do to improve our connection, I always say, with ourselves first and then with others, you know, with our family environment and then out of our family environment into the greater world and greater society, we have a chance to help each other.
Definitely. I've heard these messages myself before, but the way you're phrasing it now, it just, it rings so true. It's, you bring a whole new perspective to what we, I think most people inherently know, and bringing this perspective, which is based on unconditional love, which is based yep. on knowing that we are all inherently good. We're not born bad.
No.
It's usually the experiences that happen to us that cause it.
Yep.
It gives us that belief, like you were talking about, the map, not the territory. It's not the territory. Mm-hmm. And we develop these beliefs at such a young age that learning that somebody does care, somebody does love us, that we do belong, that our three core fears are being negated and met is just such a powerful thing.
It is. I have a chart that is all up around our school. Our teachers use it. It's all on their desks. The students have it. And it's a graph of above-the-line thinking and below-the-line thinking. So you yep. have a choice to think below the line. There's this red line through it. And to below-the-line thinking, where you live at the effect of what someone else has done to you or what society has done. You know, all those events in our life that make us feel hopeless, or there's a scarcity of food or money, where we're uncertain, where we react instead of responding, you know, where we feel stuck, judgment, or whether there's a problem, or even procrastination. And of course, you've got those extra ones of victim, fear, and failure. We can live in there, but we'll have a miserable life. We really won't be able to achieve things that we're capable of. But if we choose to live above the line, which is causing our life, so we actually cause the life that we live, we create it, then we're living in that beauty of being responsible for our choices, of responding instead of reacting, of having clarity, being in abundance, even, you know, the own wealth of our beingness, of who we are as a human being, and having hope, you know, and as you say, coming from that unconditional love that gives us acceptance, where we can solve problems and have actions in our life that cause us to be a hero. And I think that's one of the fallacies of television today, is that we're always watching heroes. But what about the hero within us? What about helping the hero in us flourish and be the person we always wanted to be, rather than thinking it's always going to happen to someone else?
So you did say we create our own world.
Yeah.
Can you explain that a little bit more for, say, for example, someone who's a refugee or someone who's been yeah. brought up, as you were, with an abusive environment, a child?
Yeah.
How do they create their environment?
Okay. This is going to be a... I'll be very truthful, because this is this was the turning point for my life. I was sexually abused when I was younger, from the age of 7 to the age of 15. And do you know, Maureen, when I hear people say, you know, you create it, or be responsible or whatever else, it's not what happened, but it's how I respond to it. That's how we create our life. And I can remember, about probably 2 months ago, I sat with myself very quietly on a Saturday, and I went through the conversations of when I was starting to be abused. And I can tell you now, the strategy I ran got me into that situation. Well, it wasn't my fault that it happened. I'm not saying that, and that's what I thought people were saying when they said you have to take responsibility. It wasn't my fault, but I can see now how that happened to me and what I did that allowed those circumstances to come into my life. And that's a huge turnaround for me. I'm I lived in victimhood all my life. And it takes me a lot to keep to get out of it and to keep out of it. But I can tell you that those strategies I ran when I was a seven-year-old were still being run this year, and I've been able to turn that around.
Mm. That's a wonderful message, and I think it's a message that there's so many people would resonate with, because the things that have happened to us as children, we didn't create it, we didn't bring back the way that we can react or respond now that we're adults as well. We can have that still be our driver for affect how we relate to people, how we communicate with people, or we can see it for what it was and go, right, okay, is this going to define me for the rest of my life, or am I going to make it so that I'll turn this around? And I can see how you've done that by actually making your life of value by being there for other people, helping other people, whether they be in Australia, whether they be over on the Thai-Burmese border. This has given you a new purpose in your own life that, probably had you not done this, you would have still been in that victimhood. So in doing this, you've got this new purpose and you can focus on that rather than what happened in the past, and you've given the past a new meaning.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, so I'd just like to see, is there anything that you'd like to share, like a special tip that you'd like to give to any of our listeners, something that maybe they could take away for themselves that might help them, or an idea or an insight, something you'd like to share for our listeners?
You know, one of the things I'd like to offer your listeners is if they wanted to send me an email, if they were interested in this, I've got an offer to make. I have this chart that's above the line, below the line thinking. And what I do with my students is I give them a journal with this chart. And, you know, Stephen Covey takes 21 days to break a habit.
Yep.
I get them to write down every night, they pick one topic, you know, like where they were feeling hopeless, for example. And I get them to write down how they were feeling, and then I get them to say, okay, I don't want to do that anymore. I have this visionary thing where they put what they're feeling, like hopeless, into this hot air balloon, a basket at the bottom of a hot air balloon, and the hot air balloon takes it away into the clouds.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And then they look above the line, and the opposite to hopeless is hope. So I get them to think about what could they do, what is something they could do in the next 24 hours that would give them hope. So they're actually journeying on in their life, creating the new circumstances that is above the line.
Mm.
And I have this worksheet where they tick it off for 21 days. And at the end of the 21 days, they move on to the next one that they choose.
Right.
And then so if your listeners wanted that chart and wanted, you know, my strategy, I'd be quite happy to send it to them.
Okay, that's good. So how can they find you, Grace?
They can email me at, if everyone's got a pen and paper, Everyone stop. I'm going to give you another email. Grace, G-R-A-C-E, M, Sharon, S-H-A-R-O-N. So that's G-R-A-C-E, M for Mary, S-H-A-R-O-N, @gmail.com.
That's great. And people can also, I'll put that on my Facebook page, so if people want to connect through Facebook, we can have your email there, and we can talk about the above the line, the below the line, and the journal system that you're using. And is that just for children, or is that for adults as well?
No, that's for adults. I use that with all my clients who want to change their thinking.
Yep, that sounds fantastic. And is there any other special tips that you'd like to give?
Know your children. Know what their needs are, as in their six core needs. Know, and I'll tell you why that's really important. I was at a school where a boy was wanting to end his life. And he came to see me as the last resort. He'd been to many psychiatrists, many psychologists. It was extraordinary. And so they came to me as the sort of like the last, oh, yeah, we'll try. And the first thing I did was do his six core needs because his parents were separated. And he got on really well with his dad, but he didn't live with his dad. He lived with his mum. And his mum and he fought 24 hours a day. They were always, always, always fighting. So, and he was even fighting with his teachers. So I did his six core needs. And he came up, one of his core needs was uncertainty. And so what his mother was trying to get him to do was have these morning rituals, get up at this time, have his breakfast here, do this here. So she was very certain. She had to have her day all mapped out. But he couldn't function like that because his core need was uncertainty. And so I rang his mum after seeing him and I said, look, I think one of the problems may be this, and I explained it, and she said, I can't believe you. You've hit the nail on the head. That's exactly what he's like. And I said, yes, it's because of his one of his drivers. And so over the Christmas break, the mother and the father were able to work out it was better that he lived with his father because his core need was uncertainty too. So the boy moved and lived with his father, and they lived happily ever after. The boy would go back and see the mum, and they were now talking, and you know, everyone was friends just because I did the six core needs.
Yeah, so could listeners then also contact you and you could do their core needs for them as well and go through that?
Absolutely.
That would be something you could do?
Yes, Margaret, I'm quite happy. I was going to offer your listeners a strategy session. If they wanted to email me, I could give them 20 minutes on how I could best help them and their family or their work situation, anything that they would like to work with.
What a wonderful gift. So that's 20 minutes, and all they need to do is contact you via email, which is Grace, GRACEMSHARON, at gmail.com. Was it .au as well?
No, just.com.
Just.com. Okay. So they can email you and you'll look at a 20-minute session, help them with their six core needs. That's great. Fantastic. So, Grace, I just want to say thank you so much for today. You've given us so much to go on. You've shared so much of your story, so much of your personal story too, that I'm sure would have been quite a moment of vulnerability for you to share. Thank you so much for that. And the fact that you've given a lot of parents a feeling of hope that they're not bad parents, they're just they're doing the best they can with what they've got, and there's always another way, and that there is someone out there who's prepared to listen, who's prepared to do what needs to be done to help, and that they can contact you. That's fantastic. And even not just in Australia, but even in America, we could have people bring in from wherever. They could email you from wherever. The beauty technology. Yeah. So once again, thank you so much for having been on today. You know, I think that's just been phenomenal. And we look forward to talking to you again before too long. So I'm just going to give a quote for today. My quote today is, your time is limited, so don't waste it living somebody else's life. Don't be trapped by dogma, which is living the results of other people's thinking. Don't let the noise of others' opinions drown out your own inner voice. And most important, have the courage to follow your heart and intuition. And that's by Steve Jobs. So for those people who'd like to contact Grace or myself, you can contact Grace on her email address. Or you could contact me on Maureen at successpathways.com.au. That's Maureen at successpathways.com.au. And until next time, when you see a need, listen to your heart, feel your gut and think differently. Then go out, make a difference in the world, as does Grace and all my other guests. So thanks, Grace, and everybody else signing off. And we will see you, talk to you again another time. Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.